I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration. Collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face. So my next interview is another Hot Docs interview, and I think, we're probably up to about six or seven. We're here today to talk with the director, Nasa, about her new film, School Life. It is a delightful journey. It's kind of like a road movie, but all happens within the context of a schoolhouse. And this beautiful, gorgeous setting and wonderful people, a deeply relational film. You're gonna love it. I mean, this is a film that is full of energy in its own way. It's full of hope. There's a sense of humor. This is all about building stronger relationships, it seems to me, from the ground up. And we open up by talking about Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. How cool is that? Coming right up, don't forget davidpecklive.com for more information about my podcasting, my speaking, a little bit of my writing as well. If you want to support what I do through Face to Face, you can do that through patreon.com, and also rabble.ca for more information about other interviews as well. Coming right up, we're talking about the Canadian premiere of the film School Life at Hot Docs, coming right at you.
Well, welcome to Face to Face. We are joined by another very special guest today. Always very special guests here on Face to Face. Nasa Nikianon is with us here today to talk about her new film, School Life, Hot Docs. Canadian premiere, a delightful film. Nasa, the first important question is, did I get your last name right? Did I pronounce it properly?
You did an excellent job.
Thank you. Because we know my Gaelic is very poor. So thanks for taking the time today. Really appreciate it.
Ah, pleasure, an absolute pleasure.
So can we start with Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star?
Yes, you can start, okay.
Isn't that kind of where it all begins, really, in a sense? You know, singing, you know, sort of, I mean, it was just such a beautiful way to end your film. And for right out of the gate, by the way, congratulations. What a delightful journey. What a beautiful film. And it's just there, a lot more going on than meets the eye, it seems to me.
Good. Yeah.
So, yeah, children, education, Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, fairy tales, stories, mystery, wonder. I mean, is that what kind of drew you in a sense at the beginning?
Well, yeah. I mean, in the beginning, it was really a search for a school for our own children. At the time, that's how the whole sort of journey began.
Isn't that interesting? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, we were living up in the northwest of Ireland, which is kind of quite a rural part of the country, and it's quite a homogenous community. And our children were attending a small village school there. And we thought that this was kind of an idyllic setting, but then you kind of realize that there was very little diversity. And we were really looking for a more broader education. And we wanted an education that wasn't so dominated by the Catholic Church as well. Mm. So we started looking locally at other schools, but in rural areas around Ireland, there's very little choice. So we cast the net a bit wider and wider, and we went to visit non-denominational schools. And then finally we realized we would have to move, we'd have to go somewhere. So we found Headford. It was the last primary boarding school in the country. And we found it on a website to begin with, and it was the letter of the headmaster that first attracted us.
Okay.
Because in it he was talking about you know, the happiness of the whole child.
Oh, okay.
And that was kind of like, that was a really good starting point for us. So we drove down to meet him and really loved what he had to say. And decided that we would move down there as a family and we would send our children there as day pupils.
And he appears in the film throughout, correct?
Yep, he is. Yeah, he himself was, I mean, Hedford, the school, like it's been running since 1948.
Right.
And it's set, the environment is spectacular. It's set in an 18th
gorgeous
century house. They have like a 48-acre wood. It's quite a special place. It's still rural, but the headmaster was a student in the school. He first went there when he was 7, and then, you know, after sort of a long meandering career as an educationalist, he was in the Dalton School in New York. He came back to Hedford with quite a progressive kind of view on education. So the school, basically, it's different from other primary schools in Ireland in that it's sort of, the subjects are teacher, like they have teachers for every specific subject.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
We just loved what we saw, and our kids attended the school for a year and we saw them blossom and thrive. And then at the same time, the headmaster was aware of our previous work. And he asked us, would we be interested in making a film about the school?
Wow.
Because nobody really knows about the school. I know, we couldn't.
It's lovely to be lovely to be invited.
Exactly. And we thought, like, David and I both had been to boarding schools as children. I went when I was 11, and I had quite a positive experience. But David was 7 when he was sent, and his parents were living in Nigeria at the time. And the Biafran War had broken out, so they sent him to a school in the UK. But he was only 7, and it was quite a traumatic experience for him. So we had kind of conflicting views about boarding school, and both of us were quite curious to know, well, what does the 21st century boarding school look like?
Right, yeah. Which is so interesting, you know. That almost sounds like it would have made a great logline. What is the 21st century
boarding school,
because your opening shots certainly don't look very, your establishing shots certainly don't look very 21st century.
No, you know what I mean?
It's just, Maybe the Jimi Hendrix mural, maybe. So tell me, you said you were looking for a broader education for your kids. What do you mean by that? Broader education? Is that more relational? Is that more, holistic, the whole child, looking for the happiness of the whole child? Is that what you meant by broader?
Yeah, well, both. I mean, we wanted it to be non-denominational because, you know, we believe that children should be, you know, taught religion, but that they should be taught all religion.
Right.
And we also, I think it is about the whole child. I mean, every child is different. And we really felt that this was a school that recognized, that children were different. And it gives them like immense freedom in a safe environment to discover who they are, like to discover where is it that they excel. So if they're not academic, maybe it's in music. If it's not in music, maybe it's in art. If it's not in art, maybe it's in sport. You know, but it just they really try and work to kind of build confident children that kind of find their little space or their little niche in life. And, you know, I think that's just
And you and David, I mean, you tease it out so beautifully. I mean, it's just, it's so relational. I mean, the space, I mean, what I got was from this, I mean, many things, I suppose, but was, you know, most of my education, I would argue most, a lot of it, not most, but, you know, kind of transactional, I guess you could say, you know, here's what you got to read. Here's what you got to write.
Yeah.
Get it done.
Yeah.
Get it in by this date and you get your A+, you get your B- and you move on.
Yeah.
And I remember my daughter, Victoria, was learning mathematics at a very young age. And I thought, you know, as I was watching some of the scenes from your film, you know, especially the music stuff and that wonderfully, you know, the mural behind them. And it's just such a wonderful moments that you create there and show and for us. I just thought, you know, what about play? Where does play come into this, you know?
Exactly.
And how could your film, change the way we look at pedagogy?
Yeah, well, I think you're right. I mean, I think that's exactly what it is. I mean, this school, it's not afraid to allow children to play because through play they learn. And that's what we see, you know, with the three characters that, that we focus on. You know, like Ted, who has dyslexia, you know, it's not about, you know, sitting down with a teacher one-to-one learning how to read, but like, you know, she, you know, Amanda, who has like an absolute passion for literature, but she gets them, she gets them to perform because he is a performer, and she gets them to play, you know, the ghost in Hamlet. And I you know, you can see the way that she, you know, she never draws attention to his dyslexia. You know, like you wouldn't know, you hardly even notice that she's reading the lines for him to repeat. You know, it's just so, you know, tenderly done.
Yes, how she kind of
encourages him.
Tenderly done is a great phrase, and I mean, you must have really seen this place in a whole different light. First, I guess, as a parent, and then getting kind of the feedback from your kids as students, but actually kind of living it for a significant amount of time. You must have I mean, it strikes me as an intimate place to begin with.
No, it was, well, we knew, like, the way we work is, you know, we really try and get to know our characters really well, and we try and create that intimacy. So literally it was just David and I who were filming. Like, you know, I did the camera, David did the sound, and we asked the headmaster, like, we wanted to work observationally. We didn't want to interview people. We didn't want any voiceover. We wanted to show people the world, to bring them into the world. So what we asked the headmaster was, could we have an office in the school so that we became part of everybody's daily life. And so we were never the focus of, you know, the film crew are here today. That was never it. We were always there. And then people just accepted us, the children and the staff. And so that sort of wall disappeared. And you know, we tried to become part of the group. So, you know, when we were with the kids, you know, they let us into their circle. You know, they really accepted us as part of the group. And the same with John and Amanda. And with John and Amanda, I have to say, you know, it did take a while. I mean, in the beginning, they thought, I mean, they had no interest in us as filmmakers.
I think I could get that sense from their, from what little I now know of these folks.
Yeah.
They wouldn't really give a rat's ass about a couple of filmmakers coming in to tell their story. They're there to teach kids and clearly to love each other. That, you know, it's just so, and again, that just so, I mean, how beautiful is that, that you've got this couple that have dedicated their lives to teaching kids, to mentoring kids, really, right?
Yeah, no,
that's,
I know.
That's the other thing for me. Like, I'm actually an electrician by trade, so I had to do, I don't kind of, what would you say, I don't practice anymore? Anyway, I did 8,500 hours as an apprenticeship, you know, working side by side, elbow to elbow with people learning how to become a better electrician. It seems to me that might be something that we've kind of lost, certainly in Western pedagogy. Maybe the question is, did we ever have it in the first place?
I don't know. I mean, like with Hedford, it didn't seem like there was like a particular pedagogy, you know, like each teacher kind of brought, I mean, with John and Amanda, it was their 46 years of experience.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And you see in the film that they're still learning, you know, you see Amanda giving out to John about, well,
it's
that
beautiful.
Was a wrong way to do that. You know, like, you shouldn't have done it like that, you
That's
know, because
right.
she does, you know, she's going to put her, you know, her walls up, her defenses up. So, you know, and John, you know, even in his 70th year, was still humble enough to sort of go, yeah, you know what, I got that wrong. You know, I'll go and apologize. And I think that was what was lovely. It's like, you know, they're teachers, but you know, they're not afraid to get it wrong and then just to correct it and to try a different approach. And then, like, with, you know, if you talk about, like, with Dermot, you know, like, what he brought from the Dalton School was like the Socratic method, where he wasn't interested in any kind of, Dermot, sorry, is the headmaster.
Right.
He wasn't interested in any kind of rote learning. You know, it was all about, you know, let's pick a subject and let's discuss it and let's listen to each other's opinions and let's move things through that, you know, and it was much more dynamic way of approaching a subject rather than going in there and saying, this is right, which is what you see in the same-sex marriage class.
Yes,
you know?
Yes, that was fascinating,
Wasn't it? And I mean, and also, like, you know, even introducing the idea of, you know, same-sex marriage to 10 and 11-year-olds, like, I mean, you know, they don't bring, you know, they speak to the kids on the same level,
right,
you know, they don't
very,
they don't
very respectful.
Tone it down. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and that's one of the funniest scenes in the film. It's just like to see the, you know, the viewpoint of the children and how they see things and how they try and, you know, figure it all out. And yeah, I mean,
well,
I love that.
You know what? I'm pretty sure it was Einstein who said that most, you know, kids before they were, you know, 5 or 6 years old know more about physics than most scientists do. Because they have a sense for how the world works. They may not have the framework and the language and the definitions and all the labels we give it, but they still have this understanding. And I think that's really, I think it's beautiful and rich, and I think it's deeply relational. And I think that's what's so remarkable about what you've captured in this film. I mean, just from John and Amanda, their relationship, but then how that's transmitted, how that's passed on through the kids and in a variety of different ways. And it's all just done in such a... as you said, tender, gentle, quirky way. There's no question, but really quite delightful. Hey, tell us what in place of the parent. What does that mean?
Okay, well, you see that the original title of this film when it was the working title. It was In Loco Parentis, which is Latin for In Place of the Parent, mm-hmm. and that is the legal status of a teacher. You know, when they're looking after kids, they are as responsible or even more responsible for the children than their parents are. Hmm. And so we thought that this, because this was a boarding school, a primary boarding school, this was the ultimate example of in loco parentis, because the children were there 24/7. And also we saw the school, like over the years, what we observed, we really felt this was like a surrogate family.
Right.
You know, and we felt that John and Amanda took the place of, you know, the grandparents, and Dermot, who had once been their student as a 7-year-old and now the headmaster, you know, he was kind of like the father, and then the, you know, the matrons were all kind of like the mums, and,
right.
you know, and it just felt like that. You know, I mean, I know lots of schools pitch the thing of like, oh, we're a family, we're a community, but, you know, it's rare that you actually see it happening. And like when we, with John and Amanda before, like when we were doing our research about the film before we decided that we were definitely going to make this film, we spoke to a lot of alumni. So we spoke to 50-year-olds, 40-year-olds, 30-year-olds, 20-year-olds about what their experience had been like in the school. And it was John and Amanda's names that kept coming up. Like they were the two teachers that left their mark. And it's funny, like with John and Amanda, if you talk to them about any of the alumni, they remember them.
And they
remember their nicknames.
It's remarkable.
And they remember that, you know, and like, even like we were, because we brought it on a small sort of cinema release around Ireland, the film, and alumni would, you know, show up and say, oh, you know, I was there in whatever, 75, or I was there in, you know, the 80s. And then we'd text John and say, oh, so-and-so showed up. And each time he remembered them. And that's how he sees them. He always calls them his kids. Like,
right.
They are his children. Well, and they will forever be his children.
Well, there's something really beautiful about the sense of inclusion that speaks to. And I'm not sure that my kids are feeling it at school. I'm not sure that I felt it at school. And I don't mean just from the teachers. I don't want to be too hard on my teachers. But it's also the environment. I mean, you know, Michel Foucault would call most schools today postmodern gas chambers.
The
architecture is just horrifying. It's bricks and steel doors and fluorescent lights. But I mean, here we've got this rich, lovely environment that, you know, as you said earlier on, you know, a space to flourish in. And I get that sense from John and Amanda, and I would imagine just you belong here, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
You are welcome here.
Yeah, no, exactly. And you know, that's what that we tried to show part of that in the film through Olive. You know, the gap student who comes back to help sort out the band that can't sing. You know, Olive was once a student there.
Yeah, she's very funny.
She is very funny. But there were many Olives. You know, there was a constant dream of gap of, you know, kids who had been to Headford, maybe in between finishing secondary school and going on to university, or having just finished university, all coming back for, you know, short periods of time, maybe some of them for a week, some of them for a term, all because they kind of wanted to spend time in the school, they wanted to give back to the school. So, you know, this was something that happened all the time, and I thought, this is extraordinary, like this isn't normal, you know, that kids who've been to a school want to come back. And like John and Amanda's house, like there's a well-worn path to through their house. You'll call down there, and there'll be a 50-year-old sitting there having lunch with them.
The shot of the dog on the kitchen table is just it's just brilliant. The books. I love the way Amanda surrounds her students in books. I mean, how wonderful and delightful. And what are you ultimately communicating? It's all, you know, the symbols and the metaphor there are just utterly astounding. Why is this the only boarding school in Ireland for kids age 7 to 12? Is there just not enough demand for it? Is it too expensive? What's going on there?
I think they've become unpopular. I think think of boarding schools being as like very draconian.
Oh, right. Of course. Yeah, you're going to get your hands wrapped.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. I think it is financial. It's awfully difficult to keep something like that going. I mean, like, say, Headford now, they have a staff of like 30 to 33 people, maybe full time. And there's 85 kids, there the year we were there. So,
wow.
I mean, you know, so yeah. So keeping all that going, and they get no state support at all.
Right.
So, you know, it is difficult for these schools to keep going. I think the year we started filming, the year before, the second last boarding school closed down because they just weren't able to do it.
And it's not surprising it's not getting government funding. I mean, it's not as easy, right? It's not as easy. I mean, maybe that's too cynical of an approach, but it's not, you know, the word I used earlier was transactional. This takes a lot of care and attention, it seems to me.
No, it does. But say the secondary schools in Ireland, most of the private schools, they do get government support. But I think there's this sort of idea that, you know, secondary school is more important than primary school, which, like, I having seen what I saw in this school, for me, I think, God, they got it so wrong.
They're so wrong, yeah.
It's like the moment the light switch is turned on, you know, for the child. No, but seriously, like, if you switch on the light switch, and they discover the joy of learning.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, that would stay with them for the rest of their life.
So there was a beautiful line that you kept in, it seems to me very intentional. One of the students, I think, talked about a flower. I wrote it down because it just a huge smile, a flower explosion. And I don't even remember what he or she was talking about, but it was just so wonderful, so delightful. And it was kind of like that. That's the argument to your statement about secondary school. No, this is where it begins.
Yeah.
Right.
No,
you notice flower explosions when you're at this age, and I think that's kind of what Einstein was talking about. As you get older, you lose that sense of certainty, that sense of wonder, that sense of whatever intentionality as a kid. As a society, we and parents and all that, we squeeze it out of our kids. It seems to me.
No, exactly, and that's exactly what we found happened to our own children, and that's what we saw in the other children . Hopefully what they learned, they will carry that through with them, you know, for their secondary and their university, you know, experience, because, you know, education, learning, all that should be fun. It should be joyous.
It should absolutely be fun. I have to say again how much I loved your film. We're going to have to wrap it up here in a second, but I could talk to you all day about this. This is just wonderful, marvelous stuff. I can't tell you how much fun the concert was and the wild thing. I mean, I don't know if it was the rehearsal. I think it was the rehearsal.
It was the rehearsal.
Oh, hysterical capital H. I mean, it's just so wasn't about the wild thing. I mean, it was awesome. Absolutely wonderful. So I think it was John who was talking about one of the rehearsals, and I just sort of had this thought now, and he said something like, you know, they hit all the right notes, but they weren't necessarily in the right order. And do you know what? For me, that's kind of what this is all about, this school. You know, we're going to hit them all right. But they're not going to be in the right order. It's going to be a little messy from time to time. You know, that one beautiful scene with the young boy taking photos and walking into the bush and with Amanda, I just kind of went, oh no, where are we going? And again, you go, it's not easy. This is, you know, aren't we a bundle of paradox and contradictions, you know, and now Headford has to deal with that in these kids. And I just so want to celebrate what you've done. It's just such a beautiful film, and I wish you all the success with it in the world.
Oh, thank you, David.
Yeah. And this is the Canadian premiere, right?
Yep, this is the Canadian premiere, and it'll be on tonight. I think it'll also be on Wednesday during the day, and again on Sunday. And then Blue Ice are our distributors, so they're planning a cinema release for it. It'll certainly be on in the Ted Rogers Cinema here in Toronto.
Wonderful.
And that'll happen sometime at the end of September. So yes, please look out for it and support it, and it will make you feel positive about the world.
Well, you know, so many documentaries. I heard somebody joke about documentary film recently, and he said, "Oh, those are the kind of movies that for people who want to feel sad."
Yeah. No, I know, and you know,
that's not your film at all.
No, it's not. It's not. And like, look, all those other documentaries, they're so important, you know. But yes, every so often, like, you need hope, and
absolutely,
and you know, I think this is a film that, you know, is hopeful.
It's inspiring. It's delightful. It's engaging. It's just so many things. It's I so love what you've done with this now. So thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. We've been talking about the film at Hot Docs Canadian premiere tonight, actually, which won't mean a whole lot to our listeners, but coming up on May the 3rd and May the 7th as well, School Life. Nasa, thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, thank you, David. Pleasure.